This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson filling in for Matt McNeil on your Friday the 13th. Traditionally an unlucky day, but I'm feeling lucky today, Patrick. Are you feeling like your luck has been affected at all by Friday the 13th?
I think we've had some pretty good luck, and I'll let you get into that.
I think we've had some good luck, too. Unfortunately, there are others around the country who may not be experiencing quite the good fortune that we are here at AM 950. Tell you what, I got a really busy show planned today, but I might have to throw a lot of that out the window because, as I understand it, Mr. Patrick Lilia, we have some breaking news. Indeed, you are listening to live breaking news on AM 950. As I mentioned, today is Friday, August 13th, and that's a big date. This is the day that Donald Trump is supposed to be reinstated as President of the United States. A very historic day. Exactly.
America!
I personally picked this day to fill in for Matt McNeil, knowing that this might be the day that defines my radio career. I could be on hosting maybe the biggest day in American history. It is unbelievable. And in fact, it is such a big day that we've actually sent Matt McNeil, the normal host of this show, on assignment to provide live coverage of the reinstatement of President Donald Trump. Matt, fill us in on the latest of what's happening.
The coronation of King Trump. So, you know, you and I talked a few months ago when Mike Lindell, MyPillow guy, Minnesota guy, Mike, he basically made a few kind of suggestions, promises, predictions on how today, August 13th, 2021, was going to go. He was planning on, now I got to, first of all, Brett, I got to be very honest. I've been on a little bit of a news cycle blackout here. You know, I took some time off. I'm on vacation following the highlight circuit, you know, personal passion. And I decided to head on out. At some point, we couldn't resist. You and I are like, this is a golden opportunity. We've got to send Matt to the mall on Washington, D.C. as we're going to be out here and, you know, checking things out, you know, to see how, once again, a major day in the history of the United States was going to unfold in front of our eyes as Mike Lindell, my pillow guy, Sasquatch, as you know, the Sasquatch TV show, as we kind of refer to him, implied he was going to have his three-day symposium in South Dakota because reasons, and we were going to have, because of this symposium, because of the proof that Mike Lindell was going to deliver, we were going to have Donald Trump installed as the President of the United States today. His promises were pretty out there. He suggested the Supreme Court, even though there's not really a court case involved here, that there was going to be a 9-0 ruling by SCOTUS, including Kagan and Sotomayor, okay, that they were going to rule that Donald Trump was robbed of the election. It was going to be such impressive proof that Joe Biden, the President of the United States, was going to resign, and so was Kamala Harris, the Vice President, and here's where it gets really fun. Here's where it gets real fun. No, I mean, like, shockingly fun. The Congressional Black Caucus was going to side with the Republican Party and install Trump, I guess, as Speaker of the House, which you could do legally.
Mm-hmm.
And that because of the resignations of the president and vice president, then Donald Trump ascends the throne, becomes the president of the United States once again. Big news. And so I have to admit, though, I'm sorry, I didn't follow too much what happened at the symposium in South Dakota because, like I said, I'm traveling across the country finding my favorite highlight teams and enjoying that action. But here I am. I'm on the mall in Washington, D.C. don't see a crowd, but that's kind of Trump's thing. He doesn't really have a crowd here on the mall when things are happening. I've got to admit, though, I'm kind of shocked. I mean, like I said, if this was to happen, this would be the most monumental days politically in the history of the United States. I mean, this is a huge deal. The Supreme Court just not even having a case and just saying, we rule 9-0, you know? Wow. Okay. And Joe Biden, think about that. You're the president of the United States, and Joe Biden comes on out and says something to the effect of, well, clearly I shouldn't be president, and resigns. God, there is no one out here. Anyway, but, you know, it kind of is one of those things where, you know, this is going to be huge. And I think, hey, you know, I run on the left of the political aisle, I know. But when history happens, we want to be there for such a monumental. Where the hell is everyone? If this is supposed to happen, as Mike Lindell has implied it's going to happen, you would think there would be someone out here. I mean, there's tourists and stuff. The mall is lovely, by the way. You know, if you haven't been, some of the secondary memorials, the World War II memorial, the FDR memorial are great. Of course, MLK, what a great memorial that one is. And along with the traditionals, Lincoln, Jefferson, Washington, they're always, you know, you get the tourists, but I'm not seeing the burgeoning crowds that you would expect with a coronation of King Trump. I mean, there's the White House. I mean, now with 90% less fast food wrappers, you know, there's, Congress and, you know, Mitch McConnell, it looks like they're feeding him some lettuce right now. How delightful. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I want to take a quick moment here. I want to just check my news feed here. I want to see what I missed in South Dakota here. Let me just take a quick look here.
Yeah, and I have several questions for you, too, now that you're reporting live. But, yeah, let's check that news feed. I'll do the same thing to see, maybe we're missing something.
What happened? Damn it, Mike! God! Oh, it sounds like, I know, this symposium that was going to prove everything. It sounds like it was a complete joke, and even his own experts contradicted his claims of soon to be. Wow. Oh, Mike, he did it again. He's done another Sasquatch episode. Where all you have to do is promise next episode we'll have the actual Sasquatch, but never have to. I'm angry. I am in Washington, D.C. on the mall enjoying life, and this is unacceptable.
Well, maybe it's this, Matt. I mean, you walk through the process of how Donald Trump can get reinstated, and maybe we're not far enough along in the process. So let's walk through this again. I broke it down as you did, and I think it's a 7-step process. Step one, fraud is proved. Step two, the Supreme Court rules that the election was fraudulent. Step three.
Without a case, mind you.
That's important.
No, there's not a case. This is just them coming out saying, guess what we've decided.
And this is important, too. These need to go in the exact order or things could be significantly thrown off. Step three is when the caucus switches to the GOP and makes Donald Trump president. Step four is when the House makes Donald Trump speaker. And that has to go in this order, because if Joe Biden resigns before Donald Trump is made speaker, well, then we'd have President Pelosi. So continuing.
Yeah, of course.
After Trump is made speaker, Joe Biden resigns, then Kamala Harris resigns, and then Trump is back in office. Those are our 7 steps. So maybe you can help me out here. Do you know what step in the process we are currently in right now?
I believe we are deciding to cut bait. We're not fishing yet. We're still cutting bait. Actually, I got to tell you the truth. All right, all jokes aside, I followed what was going on in South Dakota these last 3 days. Magnificent. Ugh. Not only, first of all, Grunhagen and Draz were there, man. Dude, man, the human catcher's mitt and Johnny Beanpole himself. Dear Lord, they were there, and they did not look like they were having a good time.
Oh, no.
And even funnier was the picture from the second day where it's like a bad lounge act where 90% of the seats right in front of the stage are empty, and you're like, oh, God, is this going as bad as it looks? And it was my favorite moment. And this was, and I actually posted up on social media about this. my favorite moment was when, okay, so Lindell's whole shtick is that the experts, and he kind of quotes, my experts have said this is going to prove everything. Well, his experts only work if they're vague and mysterious and they're not really out there and no one's really saying anything. And, of course, earlier this week you had Dominion file a lawsuit against OAN and Newsmax and some of their hosts as, once again, they are handing out billion-dollar lawsuits like they're Chiclets. And so they're handing out more of them. So clearly, and of course you also have the judge, a Trump judge dismissed by Giuliani and Sidney Powell and Mike Lindell to dismiss the Dominion lawsuit, which that's going through. So they're screwed. But now you have all these quote unquote experts who are on that Lindell has brought on stage and said, here is this expert. And you knew it wasn't going to go well the minute they said, well, here's an expert in intelligence. I'm an analyst. I'm not an expert in intelligence. I'm an analyst for this. Okay, here's an analyst for this who's written this paper. I didn't write this paper. I contributed a small piece to it, but I have nothing to do with this paper. So, you know, they themselves were downplaying expectations. And very quickly, his own experts were like, there's no there. There's no fire here. Steve Bannon was basically saying there's no receipts. You know, Lindell, basically, it's the Sasquatch show. But the reality is, I think, with as bad as this debacle was, I mean, you really have the only people that seem to think that there's anything to anything this guy's saying anymore are the most bizarre, broken, delusional QAnon followers. And, yeah, that's it. And even the Draz and the Grunhag, it's, even they seem to have run for the hills on the second day at this point. I mean, I didn't see them there. I didn't see them in the photos, so I don't know if they were still there. But, you know, even the most far-right loon balls in Minnesota have decided, you know, South Dakota is too far away from my home district right now. So, you know, it's an embarrassment, but that's Mike Lindell.
And as you brought up, this event did not go well for Mike Lindell, and that's got to be thrilling for the Minnesota Republican Party, because I wonder how this would affect him if he decided to run for governor. What do you think on that, Matt? Do you think this event would actually hurt him should he decide to run for governor, or does the base not really care?
I don't think the base cares. I mean, because once again, they want the most fervent right wing. I mean, dear God, are you seeing what's going on in this country with masks in schools? And these far-right loon balls attacking teachers, threatening school boards? No, I don't think it necessarily dims his chances to win the nomination. The question has to be, did this go so bad that stopped him from thinking about it? Or did this go so badly that he's going to run to become try to become the governor of the state of Minnesota as a way to just try to change the subject onto something else? And if I'm a Republican, especially with the news today or yesterday, by the way, so brave of Jennifer Grand Canyon Carnahan and Jim Hagedorn to finally condemn the guy, the alleged sex trafficker that they're buddies with.
Well, you don't want to throw your podcast co-host under the bus, no matter the allegations.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that they basically finally have come on out and said something. You know, if I'm the Minnesota GOP, I'm praying right now that Lindell stays back. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's clear Gazelka is going to try to run. I don't think he's going to have enough to knock out the witch doctor, Jensen. And when I say witch doctor, I said I don't know which one he is. I'm not saying he's a witch doctor, like a witch doctor. I'm saying, which doctor is he? Is he an actual doctor, or is he the other guy that seems to follow the craziest people? Which doctor will we see? So he can choose the witch doctor, or Paul Gazelka, or Mike Lindell. God, is that a buffet I can get thirds or fourths of servings on? My God, is that just an absolute debacle for them? And once again, this is their great white hope in I do mean white. Saving the GOP and getting statewide wins. And on top of that, then you have the census findings. Holy God, it's turning into a freaking nightmare for the Republicans. I just you know, Lindell would only just add to the chaos at this point. I don't know. It really is, you know, it is just such a mess they've gotten themselves into, because they've cozied on up to the craziest elements of the far right, and this is what you get. So, no, you're not going to have the coronation of Trump. You could end up having Lindell become a much bigger problem for the Minnesota GOP, but the Minnesota GOP has their own problems with their associates, and your three choices for the Minnesota governor could be, Paul, hey, let's have a party during a pandemic. Wait, we're all sick. Oh, don't tell the DFL, Gazelka, witch doctor, or Mike Lindell. Mwah! I couldn't have drawn a better script myself, and I hate those people. I hate them, and I couldn't do a better scenario. Not in my wildest dreams did I ever dream that could be your three-person head, like a Monty Python extra. You know, that would be, you know, what you get for the Minnesota GOP.
I think Gazelka would fade very quickly in that three-person race. It would come down to Jensen versus Lindell, and that's just a case of who's going to out-crazy each other. That would just be a horrible primary for the Republicans as they try to win back a lot of these suburban seats that, as you brought up with redistricting, are going to be a lot tougher for the Republicans to win. And having a Lindell or a Jensen at the top is an absolute nightmare.
Not only do you have that New York Times story where they talk about the fact that for the first time ever, Minnesota actually lost white population, Caucasian population, while the minority populations in the state grew substantially, which is also a bad sign for Republicans. Although Gazelka tries to make it seem like the Latino vote will somehow turn completely and go all Republican. But on top of that, what you get is the numbers that the Bring in the News guys had yesterday, which showed the growth. I mean, Minneapolis, Hennepin County picked up 120,000 people. You're going to have to give them another two House seats in Hennepin County alone, let alone the other districts in Olmsted County, in St. Louis County, in the Duluth area, in the Moorhead area. And sure, you might get something for the Republicans out of the Mankato area, but, I mean, you're looking at eight House seats, four Senate seats, likely going on the plus side for the Democrats, the DFL in Minnesota. It's going to be ugly. And you have this scandal, and you've got the head of your ticket is going to be either freaking Mike Lindell, the witch doctor, Scott Jensen, or Paul Gazelka. And you're right, Brett. My guess is going to be it's going to be down to Jensen and Lindell if that's the three-person race. And watch how the think about the Minnesota GOP having to embrace Scott Jensen, a vaccine denier, a COVID denier, as their bellwether. I mean, at that point, you've lost all the statewide races, and my guess is you're going to be looking at, you know, if they can somehow redeem themselves and just hold, you know, their standing within the House would, I think, be actually pretty amazing. If they can actually just hold the House seats they have. I know it's an off-year election and all that stuff, but when you look at how this is playing out for them, it is a nightmare scenario.
I know we're almost out of time here, but I did hear a police siren in the background. Did that happen to be a motorcade for Donald Trump going back to the White House, if you can just take a peek there?
not a motorcade. I think someone just basically, it looks like just a school group urinating on a Trump sign. I didn't, America, you know, it's bright stuff. Hey, I can say one last thing. I just want to make sure I say this. I'm very happy to see this story that came through. It sounds like teen vaccinations in Minnesota have gone up dramatically in the last 2 weeks. 12 to 15, 16 and 17-year-olds up dramatically, like 100% from the. Can I just say, once again, as I have been traveling across the country, and I have seen some crazy-ass crap in the last week, man, in regards to vaccinations and mentalities of local politicians. In Minnesota, can I just say, once again, and this has been the standard I've had, I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. The fact that you are seeing a dramatic increase in the vaccinations of kids as we're getting ready back to go to school is a good sign, but please, once again, mask up, social distance, be careful, because, you know, because of the unvaccinated, this is not going to be over, and it's not going to be over for a little bit.
No, unfortunately, I think you're right. This is probably going to last well into 2022, and thank God we actually have political leaders in our state that know what they're doing and are taking proper public safety measures, because as I'm sure you can, you'll bring up when you're back on Tuesday, yeah, there it is a lot different in several of these other states that you've been visiting.
Yeah. Thanks to Todd. Thanks to Jack Rice, who's going to be filling in on Monday, I believe, correct? And thank you, Brett, as well. I appreciate you guys letting me get some time off. It's been nice to see some family, especially after a year and a half of this. I've really appreciated that. So thank you very much. And yes, we're tongue-in-cheek. We make jokes. We're a joke show. We're tongue-in-cheek. I'm not really on the mall in Washington, D.C. No one really believes Mike Lindell. I know. Pantomime, my acting ability still in check. I think when I mentioned I was following the highlight circuit, I think that was pretty, because unless I'm in Miami, that doesn't work. We joke, but I will tell you what, it's scary. There are some people that are concerned that there's going to be some violence today because of this. And if that does happen, if violence does happen, the only person that should carry the blame is Mike Lindell. And that's the reality. I think that because he's pushing this and only this week basically said, okay, it's not going to happen. You've made some expectations within some really crazy ass people. So you've got to be careful with what you promise there.
Absolutely. Hey, that's Matt McNeil on vacation, but good enough to call in on this very, well, not so historical day. Donald Trump
exactly.
Not reinstated, but Matt McNeil will be reinstated. I can guarantee you that on Tuesday, as he will be back hosting the Matt McNeil Show. It is not a hoax. We do have data to back up that Matt will be back on Tuesday. Look forward to seeing you then, Matt.
Hey, Brett, thank you very much, Patrick. You guys have a great show. I am going off to go, basically feed my face with shrimp. I will talk to you later, my friend.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah, eat that shrimp. All right, Matt, we'll talk to you on Tuesday. We'll take a break as you are listening to the Matt McNeil Show with Brett Johnson and Patrick Lilia filling in here on this Friday afternoon. Stay with us. We got more coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson filling in on a Friday afternoon, Friday the 13th. Patrick Lilia also helping out. Unfortunately, as we heard, Donald Trump has not been reinstated as president of the United States, so that plan has completely blown up. I've had fun kind of following along with what's been happening at this Mike Lindell symposium. Usually when I come in every day, I usually scan the Twitter feed and retweet some stuff over on our AM 950 radio Twitter account. And a couple of these tweets from people who have been reporting for the symposium have caught my eye a little bit. This one is from Brad Heath over at Reuters, as he says, Lindell's cyber event is winding down without showing any evidence. The current speaker just said, no one wants to hang out with me. Another tweet from Justin Baronia of the Daily Beast says, a worn down and noticeably dejected Mike Lindell, after being off stage for hours, returns to his symposium and repeats that he was attacked last night at his hotel, adding that it was physically attacked. Now, I just need to confirm this. I know Matt McNeil was not in South Dakota. Patrick, you were not in South Dakota last night, were you? I'm assuming you weren't.
Nope, I was not.
You took a long time to answer that, so I might have to do a little further investigation on that. I was not in South Dakota last night, so just to be clear, Mike Lindell, it was not one of the three of us that apparently assaulted you last night, but he did file a report, it sounds like, with the Sioux Falls Police Department, as they would not confirm whether Lindell was the victim of an alleged crime, but did tell the very right-leaning Washington Examiner of a report filed Thursday morning matching the basic description of Lindell's claim, but the department said due to Marcy's Law, we are not able to identify victims of crimes, quote and unquote, although I would be a little skeptical whether Lindell actually was the victim of a crime, given his history of lying and not producing any evidence of what he says. So an absolute disaster of a election fraud symposium from Mike Lindell. No fraud was proved on the final day. Donald Trump was not reinstated as president of the United States. But like so many prognosticators and Nostradamus types, I believe we've already had new predictions from several on the right saying that I believe September 20th is going to be the next big day when Trump could potentially be reinstated. So have to hold our breaths on that one.
This is like those doomsday prophecies when these guys would say the world is going to end on October 12th and the day comes and goes and they go, we miscalculated. The new date is actually November 5th. And that comes and goes. And then they finally kind of go away after that. But I don't think these guys are going to go away this time.
No, they're not going away whatsoever. I think you're absolutely right on that. Hey, let's take a break, because when I come back, I want to dive a little bit deeper into the political future of Mike Lindell. Love to have you join the conversation with me, whether that's you calling on the phones at 952-946-6205 or you on the other side of the booth, Patrick. I want to talk about the political future of Mike Lindell, because as Matt was talking about, I think he still does have a future in the Republican Party of Minnesota, despite how disastrous of a symposium we just had. So we'll talk about that coming up next here on AM 950. Brett Johnson filling in for Matt McNeil. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, but Brett Johnson filling in for Matt on Friday the 13th. He'll be back on Tuesday. Well, Matt McNeil, so you got me today. Then Jack Rice is back on Monday. And I can't officially announce it, but he has a big-time guest lined up for, I think, his entire show on Monday that you are not going to want to miss. This is going to be a big exclusive we're going to have when Jack Rice fills in for Matt. So make sure you tune in on Monday from 4 until 6 o'clock. Going to be a really informative show. So make sure you listen for Jack Rice coming up on Monday. So let's go back and talk a little bit more about Mike Lindell. Matt and I briefly got into whether he actually has a future in the Republican Party, despite the absolute debacle of his cyber symposium from this week. And I think we have to look at this from two different perspectives when it comes to political parties and how they nominate candidates. Because you have to remember, we have the nomination and we also have the endorsement. So think about it this way. The endorsement is what happens first. This is what happens at the state convention for both the DFL and the Republicans, where they go and endorse a candidate. Now, just because someone gets endorsed does not mean that they go on to become the nominee, because, of course, later in the year, there actually will be a primary to decide who will get a letter of the political party next to their name on the final ballot. So the first step is the endorsement process, which usually takes place sometime in June. So I'm guessing the DFL and the Republican Party will probably hold their endorsement and state conventions probably next May or next June. And then the actual primary election for the nomination is held in August. The nomination, of course, is what decides who goes on to be the party's nominee on the actual general election ballot. But that endorsement process is still very important, because it can give lesser known and less financed candidates a better chance at winning that nomination. The analogy I use, if we go back to sports, is kind of comparing it to an NFL team that gets the number one seed in the playoffs and a first round bye. You, of course, get a big advantage by getting the number one seed and home field advantage throughout the playoffs, but it's by no means a guarantee that you're going to go on and win a championship. So it's kind of the same deal in politics, where if you win that endorsement, your chances of getting the nomination do increase, but it's not a foregone conclusion that you will actually be the nominee. In fact, we have a good example of that from the DFL in 2018, where Tim Walz, who did go on to become governor, was not the endorsed DFL candidate. That was Erin Murphy, who was actually the DFL endorsed candidate. Walz defeated her in the gubernatorial primary back in 2018.
I believe that's actually happened in two of the last three cycles. I believe Mark Dayton was not the endorsed candidate in 2010 when he won the gubernatorial election either.
Think, I think actually that goes back even further historically, at least on the DFL side, where when they have an open seat and they don't have an incumbent, I think it's been something like since the 1980s where the endorsed candidate has not gone on to be the general election nominee. I'm not quite sure what the history is on the Republican side, but I think they do have a little bit more success of having their endorsed candidates going on to be the nominee. Now, here's why I bring this up with Mike Lindell. I think he could maybe suffer some political damage from what happened this week, at least when it comes to a gubernatorial primary election. And a primary is, of course, where everyone that wants to vote Republican is allowed to vote. It's open to the public. At the endorsement convention, that's only limited to party members who have to wade through the ranks, starting at the local level and then at the county level and then finally to the state level. And this is why that's important. While Lindell could be hurt in a nominating contest, I could still very easily seeing him get it, the endorsement at a GOP convention. Because normally when you have these state conventions for both parties, whether it's the DFL or the Republicans, it's not representative of who will actually vote in the general election and in that primary election. It's mostly activists and the people who are really ardently involved with the base. And those are the people who are usually leaning a little bit more left for the Democrats and a little bit more right for the Republicans, or I would say in the case of the Republicans, a lot more to the right. Now, in 2018, when I worked for Mike McEntee for a weekend, I had a chance to stream the Republican convention where they nominate their candidate for governor. And what happened was that the endorsement contest was supposed to largely be between Jeff Johnson and Tim Pawlenty. Now, a few days before that convention, Pawlenty basically said, I'm not going to attend the convention and I'm going straight to the nominating contest. So he pretty much became persona non grata at the Republican convention as he was actually getting booed by a lot of people at the convention in Duluth back in 2018. So that should have completely opened the road for Jeff Johnson back in 2018 to be the endorsed Republican candidate. But guess what? That didn't happen. It took several ballots for Jeff Johnson to secure that Republican endorsement back in 2018. And that was because there were several fringe Republican candidates who most people had never heard of, but gave very fiery speeches on the convention floor. And they were able to siphon away several votes for Jeff Johnson. And it took him, I think, about 6 or 7 ballots before he was finally able to secure the Republican nomination. And that's significant because Jeff Johnson was the only really known politician that was seeking the endorsement. Like I said, Pawlenty didn't seek it, and the rest of the guys were a bunch of fringe, extreme right-wing candidates. And yet it still took Jeff Johnson several ballots to finally secure that Republican nomination. So going to Mike Lindell, even though he could be hurt among your more mainstream Republicans, once you have that Republican state convention, just imagine him giving a speech and riling up the base and getting them fired up. I could see him very easily becoming the endorsed candidate for the Republican Party at their state convention that next year. He's very good at riling up the base and working them into the frenzy, and that could very easily happen next year at the Republican state convention. So he could easily have a heads up on the rest of those Republican candidates, whether it's Paul Gazelka or Scott Jensen, even though Lindell certainly is toxic among many Minnesotans. If he wins that Republican endorsement, that's a big feather in his cap towards winning the Republican nomination, because with that endorsement, you get party resources and you get a lot of other benefits, including saying, hey, I am the official Republican candidate that has been endorsed by the party. That's why you should nominate me. So this is a big nightmare possibly for the Republicans if he does indeed decide to run for the nomination, because if you get a convention full of a bunch of riled up right-wing Trump supporters, they very easily could go and decide, you know, we need to go down the Mike Lindell bandwagon. Screw Scott Jensen, screw Paul Gazelka, screw whoever else is running. Mike Lindell is our champion. So while he's definitely on the fringes and unpopular with many Minnesotans, including Republicans, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with in 2022 should he decide to run. What are you thinking about Mike Lindell over there, Patrick?
Well, I think the problem, and it's kind of being in between a rock and a hard place, is, like you said, a lot of Republicans are not necessarily a fan of his, And I think there are some who want to move away from Donald Trump, but a lot of people are thinking, no, we want someone who is going to get into the governor's office and he will fight for Donald mm-hmm. Trump and push what Donald Trump wants to do. And obviously Mike Lindell checks both of those boxes.
Yeah, and that's how those conventions work. It's true for both the DFL and the Republican side, where it's very possible to get those conventions. I don't know if I necessarily use the term hijacked, but can't think of a better phrase. They can oftentimes take over those conventions. On the DFL side, that did happen in 2018, where it looked like it was probably going to be Tim Walz as the endorsed candidate, but Erin Murphy ran a nice campaign and was able to get the base on her side, and she was the one who ended up getting the DFL endorsement. Now, she did go on and lose the nomination, but it is very possible to have some of these lesser-known candidates and maybe less popular-type politicians win the endorsement, and it is significant. So Mike Lindell, probably not going away for the Republicans, and he is a big factor possibly in the 2022 election should he decide to run. And I don't know, I think he might decide to run because he's going to need money, and he could very easily be a powerful fundraiser for his possible political future. There's a lot of people that are on the fringes of the Republican Party that would love to donate Mike Lindell a ton of money. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Got some other news to talk to you about in the next few segments. Got one more here in hour one, then in hour two we'll get to a lot more, including talking about redistricting and how you should talk about vaccines with people who are anti-vaxxers. So stick with us. That's all coming up next here on the Matt McNeil Show with Brett Johnson filling in on this Friday the 13th. It's gonna be kind of right tonight. Can I get some nasty bass? By the way, as you just heard Tom talking about All Energy Solar, that is a tremendous deal from them, where you can get cash back from All Energy Solar by getting your system installed. Make sure you check them out, allenergysolar.com. You only got until Monday to at least get your contract signed. And once you get that contract signed, All Energy Solar will start calculating how much money you would have saved if your system was installed on the day you signed your contract. And once it is installed, you'll get a cash check for that amount. What an absolute awesome deal. So make sure you check them out, allenergysolar.com. But that deal does expire on August 15th, which by my math, is on Sunday. So get on that quickly, allenergysolar.com. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Gary in Minneapolis who wants to chime in. Hey, Gary, how you doing today?
Good. How you doing?
Hey, great here.
No, I never underestimate the people in this country's ability to elect evildoers after they got W in there twice. And remember, Clinton left the economy booming. People were doing good. And the first thing you do is run this and bankrupt the country again, and they cry about what we're in. So I think we should call that Republican Party the pro-death party, whether it's, you know, the climate and global warming, that's a hoax, the gun deaths, mass shootings, let's pray, but let's not do a darn thing else. You know, so the healthcare system, all the bankruptcies and poverty caused by it. So they love that greedy corporate power. That's about it there. Good to hear from you, Brett, or talk to you.
Yeah, I'll talk to you another day there, Gary. Appreciate the phone call. In fact, there's a term I'll bring up in hour two that I'd like to call Republicans who are in favor of having preemptive control of local government, where they want to ban mask mandates and ban vaccine passports. We'll talk a little bit about that in hour two, about the term I've come up with. It's called big government conservatives, and we'll go into more detail about that coming up in hour two. So I want to wrap up a few more thoughts about what's been happening with election fraud and Mike Lindell and other states that are conducting these forensic audits. It's a big concern when it comes to data privacy. And this is the thing I would really be arguing when I talk to someone about whether it's Mike Lindell saying the election was stolen or states like Arizona and now Wisconsin wanting to conduct forensic audits to make sure that there was no fraud in the last election. To me, I think it's a big issue of data privacy and making sure your data stays private and is not being sold to the highest bidder or being hacked by somebody. It's a very legitimate concern. Going back to the Mike Lindell Symposium, they had a person attend the convention named Tina Peters. Now, she is the Mesa County, Colorado election clerk, and she's now under investigation by the Colorado Secretary of State's office, as well as the Mesa County District Attorney's office, for allegedly participating in a very strange incident that resulted in the county's election software passwords being posted online, all for this stupid symposium that was conducted. So think about that. The county's election software passwords were posted online by this idiot. So these election software, or this election software, could now potentially be hacked by somebody thanks to this person deciding, yeah, I'm going to post these passwords online. And of course, it doesn't stop there. Let's recap what's been happening in Arizona. Arizona, of course, had a very close presidential election where Joe Biden narrowly edged Donald Trump in their election for president. Arizona conducted, I believe, 3 nonpartisan audits at the end of 2020 and the beginning of 2021. And all of these nonpartisan audits showed that there was no fraud in the election. But that did not stop the Republican-controlled state Senate in Arizona from conducting their own audit. And what did they do with their own audit? Well, they hired a firm called Cyber Ninjas that has no experience whatsoever auditing elections. And it's an organization which appears to be just a one-man operation run by a guy who has many extremist right-wing views. He's been peddling election conspiracy theories. He appeared in a movie that was directed by a guy who thought aliens were responsible for 9/11. So that's the guy that the Arizona State Republicans decided to audit their election system. And that work is still ongoing. Supposedly, this forensic audit in Arizona was supposed to wrap up during the spring. But that has not been the case. We are here on August 13th, and the audit is still ongoing. To add more factors to this, they had a bunch of data that was shipped to a cabin in Montana, I think driven by a guy in a truck. They took truckloads of this computer data and brought it up to a cabin in Montana so it could be forensically audited by this guy with Cyber Ninjas. Just imagine that for a second. Private election data is on a truck being driven from Arizona to Montana with your personal information, probably your name, probably your address, probably your phone number, and it's going to God knows where. Think about that. That is a massive violation of data privacy, and that's the argument I would be making when it comes to these forensic audits. Yes, they're absolute clown shows, but what's happening with our data? What are you doing, Cyber Ninjas and Arizona Republicans, to make sure that the public's data is not being hacked or sold to the highest bidder? We still don't even know what's happening in this Montana cabin, since it has private property and no trespassing signs posted everywhere. It is absolutely insane, and several other states would like to follow the model of Arizona, including Wisconsin. They want to run their own Arizona-style audit, and I imagine if Minnesota was under Republican control and you had the likes of Kurt Dowd and Paul Gazelka in charge, we would be having our own audit run, and very likely our own personal data would be put at risk. So that's the argument I would make when it comes to talking about these goofy audits. What's happening to our personal data? We have no idea. It could be hacked, it could be stolen, it could be getting sold to the highest bidder. All right, that's going to be it for hour one. Stick around, we got hour two of the Matt McNeil Show coming up next on AM 950.
Cocktails with the best music in the Twin Cities at Crooner's Supper Club in Fridley. Crooner's is off Highway 65 and Moorlake Drive, just north of 694. More at croonersmn.com.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
Not pre-recorded this hour, though. We are live for the entire 5 o'clock hour on the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson filling in here on this Friday the 13th, where Donald Trump was supposed to be reinstated, but ultimately, it looks like that is not going to be happening. So very sad about that, because I was going to fill in for one day when Matt was on vacation, and I intentionally made sure it was going to be Friday, August 13th, so I could be covering this very historical day in American history. Man, what a thing I could have put on my resume. I hosted a radio show on the biggest day in political history in not just America, maybe even the entire world, where the so-called leader of the free world would resign because there was election fraud and the previous leader would be reinstalled as president of the United States. Oh man, unfortunately, it didn't happen, so I'm a little bummed about that. But to put us in a better mood, though, I want to bring Patrick in on this conversation. Last night, did you happen to watch Fox and see the Field of Dreams baseball game between the White Sox and Yankees?
I watched a part of that game.
Yeah, it was quite the... Did you watch the end of it? Because that was absolutely insane.
I had another obligation,
unfortunately.
Oh, are
you kidding me?
I thought about it after, and I was like, I can't believe I missed this.
Yeah, if you missed it, the Yankees headed into the bottom or the top of the ninth inning, down 7-4, and they were able to hit two home runs to take an 8-7 lead over the White Sox. But then in the bottom of the ninth inning, the White Sox hit a two-run homer of their own to beat the Yankees 9-8 over at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa. I believe the same field that was used for the movie that was made back in the late 1980s. It was a really cool scene out there, as I think they had only about 8,000 people in the crowd because, well, you're playing on a farm. You can't exactly pack in 50 or 60,000. And they were talking about how this might have been the most expensive ticket in Iowa sports history. It was overall a great game and just some really cool scenes. And as I was watching this, Patrick, and as I hear more and more people talking about what a success this was for Major League Baseball, getting a game at a really cool venue like this, if MLB is to continue playing these neutral site games at these really distinct and interesting venues, they should look at some of these town ballparks in Minnesota, because our state is known for, I believe, having, I think, the biggest town ball league in the entire country. It's a big, big thing in a lot of small towns in Minnesota. We have a lot of really cool parks, including Chaska Athletic Park, I think, is the nearest one from the metro area. I've been able to broadcast a few games from there. It's a really old school park that was built early in the 20th century, and that would just be really cool to see some major league games being played at these town ballparks. So if MLB decides to continue this trend, hopefully they can bring it to Minnesota and either to a place like Chaska Athletic Park or some of these other stadiums around the state. I think that would be really cool to see a game played like in a town of like 3,000 or 4,000. So if they continue doing this, we'll see if they bring it to Minnesota. But I think they most certainly should do so. It's all about TV ratings anyways. No one cares about attendance at actual ball games and selling tickets. Most sports teams now get their revenue through TV contracts, so don't think they would be missing a lot by playing in a smaller ballpark as long as they're able to spike those TV ratings. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Would you go to any of those types of games if you like saw a Major League Baseball game being played at a town ballpark?
I would absolutely love to. I have to admit, I actually got curious and Googled ticket prices for the Field of Dreams game last night, and all I had to do was get on Google and see there was no way I was getting into that ballpark, but it was still a fun thought.
Yeah. They had a nice fence on the outfield. I don't even think they had a fence on the outfield. It was basically just corn, and I think they had like a some sort of contraption, like maybe a big long board that went along the corn so you could tell whether a ball would be a home run or not. So overall, it was just a really cool atmosphere. And as you said, yeah, those ticket prices were insane. I think they said each team was allotted about 1,500 tickets, and the remainder were sold to the citizens of Iowa, and they were going for a lot of money. All right, sticking with the baseball theme, we are now going to relate this to politics, because I think the DFL, if they want to bring back rural voters, has a real opportunity on this issue right here. And it has taking a mountain out of a molehill. That, of course, is something that Republicans are very good at, not just nationally, but also in the state of Minnesota. Case in point, look back at the 2014 election cycle where the DFL controlled both chambers of the state legislature, but ended up losing the state house in 2014 over a really stupid issue during that election cycle. You might remember the old Senate office building. So what happened back in 2014, again when the DFL controlled the state legislature, they decided we need to build a new building for the Senate, since the current building was something like 60 or 70 years old. Now keep in mind, both political parties get to have offices in this Senate office building, but Republicans, as they so often do, made a mountain out of a molehill and talked about in the 2014 cycle how this was a waste of taxpayer dollars, and look at your taxpayer money being used to build new office buildings for these spendocrats, or however else they want to call Democrats. Now, what's funny, after that building was built, of course, is that with the Republicans in the majority in the state Senate, they're the ones that are now primarily using that building. So, yeah, we'll be a little quiet about that. But back to my point of making a mountain out of a molehill, I think the DFL could possibly have an opportunity here to appeal to rural voters, and it has to do with baseball. So here's the story. I saw this in the Star Tribune earlier this week. There is this company in Caledonia, Minnesota, which is located in southeast Minnesota. And what they do is make baseball helmets and baseball bats for Major League Baseball. And this company, Mike and Sports, is owned in part by Major League Baseball. And they had a factory in Caledonia, Minnesota that employed about 80 people. But they have announced that that building and plant will be closed within the next 18 to 24 months, as they are going those 80 jobs to either Missouri or Communist China. What a horrible look for Major League Baseball to be sending these jobs to either China or Missouri. Now, a Major League Baseball spokesperson said the decision was made independently by Rawlings Sporting Goods, who is another owner of that factory. Again, MLB is only a part owner, without input from the baseball organization. MLB, they say, owns a small minority interest in Rawlings, they say around 20%, adding that the batting helmets will continue to be U.S.-made, even though the jobs are going to be shipped to Missouri and some to China. Now, this company in Caledonia has also gotten a lot of local tax assistance, including tax abatements and property tax breaks. That is according to Allison Wagner, the director of the Houston County Economic Development Authority, which I believe is where Caledonia is located within. So here's what I would bring up with this right now, because Tina Smith, our, of course, U.S. state senator, has gotten involved a little bit with this, talking about how it's a horrible thing, and she brought up in her press release talking about how Major League Baseball receives stadium subsidies and lots of other public benefits, including, of course, that antitrust exemption. She was angry about this, as was Republican Representative Greg Davids, who represents the area. But here's what I would do if I'm the DFL. Make this a big issue about rural jobs. Make this a campaign issue, in essence, and say, this is how we're standing up for rural Minnesota jobs. Major League Baseball and Rawlings Sporting Goods wants to ship a whole lot of our rural Minnesota jobs to Missouri and Communist China. I think you could get some people on board with that. You could put some pressure, let's say, on the Minnesota Twins and tell them, hey, we need to make sure we keep these jobs in Minnesota. The DFL, of course, does struggle trying to get rural voters, so I think there possibly could be an opening here, especially when we look at the fact that MLB teams have, of course, received many stadium subsidies, including the building of Target Field. So there's an opportunity right here for the DFL to say, this is how we're saving rural America from big business. We're going to make sure that these jobs are not going to be shipped overseas. So little thing that I think could be an opening for the DFL when it comes to campaigning in 2022. Make a big issue out of this. Yes, it's only 80 jobs, and yes, it's something like baseball helmets and baseball bats, not exactly life and death, but hey, it is still rural jobs, and as the Republicans have shown, they are great at making a mountain out of a molehill, so maybe do the same thing with this Caledonia factory. Let's take a break and come on back with more news on the way here on AM 950. It is Brett Johnson filling in for Matt McNeil on a Friday afternoon. And a We're back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson filling in for Matt here on this Friday. Matt will be back on Tuesday, so you got me today. And then Jack Rice has a big show coming up on Monday. I can't officially announce who the guest is, but you will definitely want to listen in, as it will be a bit of an exclusive here on AM 950. So make sure you tune in to Jack Rice coming up on Monday, as he'll be filling in for Matt on his last day of vacation until Mr. McNeil is reinstated on Tuesday, which is that the 17th, isn't it? Yeah, it's got to be the 17th. So that'll be when Matt McNeil is reinstated. And unlike Mike Lindell, I think I can back up that claim that Matt will indeed be back on Tuesday, the 17th. So I want to have a little fun in this segment and turn some arguments on their head when it comes to vaccines. In this segment, I am going to make the argument that vaccines are pro-business and pro-freedom and pro-liberty. Let's start off on the idea of vaccines being pro-freedom and pro-liberty. Well, I think you gain freedom and liberty by mandating vaccines because, well, first up, people gain the right to not become sick and to not get a serious illness and to not be hospitalized and to hopefully not die. We already have mandated vaccines for things like polio and other diseases, and God knows what other junk we put in our body through processed food, so I don't get the argument that by mandating vaccines, we don't know what we're putting into our body. No, I think we actually gain freedom and liberty by making sure we're vaccinated. By the way, mandated vaccines mean you're guaranteed a bed in a hospital if, God forbid, you have, let's say, a heart attack or a car accident or a broken arm or whatever else you get. Right now, in a number of states around the country, you can't get a hospital bed because hospitals are currently at capacity with COVID patients. So imagine if you have mandated vaccines to go into private businesses or to go on an airline. That means less people are going to be hospitalized, and that means you're actually guaranteed a bed in the ICU if you, God forbid, become seriously ill. That's not the case right now. I mean, imagine how scary that would be if you're living in a state like Missouri or Texas or Florida and you suffer a stroke or a heart attack or get into a car accident and you hop in the ambulance and head to the hospital and you find out, unfortunately, we don't have any hospital beds available for you. That's a really scary thought to think of. So again, I think you gain freedom and liberty by being vaccinated. You have the freedom and liberty to get a hospital bed should, God forbid, you need one. And by the way, on the pro-business side, getting vaccinated helps rural hospitals. Here's why. Without COVID patients, those rural hospitals could actually perform elective surgeries, which is how hospitals make a big part of their revenue. So if you mandate vaccines, that means you can get those elective surgeries back on the books in hospitals, not just in rural areas, but around the entire country. And that helps them stay open. Unfortunately, that's been a trend over the past decade or so, where a number of rural hospitals have had to close because they're not bringing in enough revenue. And having them deal with COVID patients is certainly not helping the situation. So there you go. There's another pro-business argument for being vaccinated. Continuing on this, let's go down to Florida, where, of course, Governor Ron DeSantis, the Republican, has banned vaccine passports. I think that's very anti-business of him. That's a big government conservative interfering with a private business. Think about that. Norwegian Cruise Lines, they do cruise ships in Florida, at least where they take off from. Norwegian Cruise Lines wants to mandate vaccines, but Governor Ron DeSantis says, no, I know better. I'm a big government conservative, and I know better than you, and I get to rule how a private business decides how to run their business. That's not pro-freedom and pro-liberty whatsoever. By the way, offices can't function properly if their employees are constantly getting sick. If they're constantly getting employees with COVID, it's tough to have meetings. It's tough to have those face-to-face meetings and have ideas where people can interact with each other, let alone actually work if they're getting sick all the time. So in a way, by not getting vaccinated, you are stifling innovation. That's a term I love. I think Mitch McConnell used that back earlier during the Obama years when he said Obama was always stifling innovation. Well, I think by not getting vaccinated and banning private businesses from having vaccine passports or, God forbid, mask mandates, you're actually stifling innovation and not allowing private businesses to function the way they want. So Ron DeSantis, he is a big government conservative, as are several of these other Republican governors who want to mandate how private businesses conduct their operations. There is nothing free and there is nothing about liberty with that. Now let's go to Wisconsin. Did you see this? Wisconsin Republican lawmakers are currently circulating a bill that would allow workers to collect unemployment if they quit their job over a vaccine mandate. Unbelievable. So if you quit your job in Wisconsin because I don't want to get a vaccine, the Wisconsin Republicans want to say, oh, we're going to give you unemployment benefits. Current law in the state stipulates that if an individual is fired or quits a job, they are not eligible to receive unemployment benefits. This would be a change. So I would say this, good job, Republicans, adding to the so-called moocher class. They are creating a Republican welfare state by allowing people who refuse vaccinations to collect welfare. We could almost create like a new welfare queen out of this. Hey, we have the COVID vaccine welfare queen. I had to think of what term I wanted to use for that. Remember how Ronald Reagan had the welfare queen back in 1979 and 1980? Turn that on their head. Republicans are trying to create their own welfare queens and people mooching off the government simply because they don't want to be vaccinated. How about in schools? Many Republican-controlled states say they don't want to allow schools to mandate masks. What they're essentially is allowing is mob rule. Take Franklin, Tennessee as an example. Franklin, Tennessee had a school board meeting earlier this month where they wanted to mandate masks. And unfortunately, a big angry mob showed up at that meeting and ended up threatening a lot of these healthcare people who were making arguments in favor of masks. In fact, if you actually watch the video, you can see several of these protesters and members of the mob threatening these healthcare workers, saying, we know where you live and we're coming after you. That is mob rule by not being vaccinated. And let alone when you have these states that are trying to prevent schools from implementing mask mandates. Again, looking at you, Florida. That is, again, a big government conservative who wants to take control away from local municipalities. Aren't the Republicans supposed to be in favor of state rights and local control? Well, not so much when it comes to COVID. Big government conservatives. That's a term I kind of am liking right now. Big government conservatives. You can do this with all sorts of things, whether it's how about Line 3? I'll use this as an example. Of course, we talk about that a lot on Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, which, of course, you can hear weekdays from 6 until 7. Why not say that building Line 3 is anti-business? It essentially is. When we inevitably have a spill on Line 3, a more gigantic spill than the ones we've already seen even before they've actually started building the pipeline, by having those spills, you're anti-business because you're hurting the tourism industry, the hunting industry, and the fishing industry in northern Minnesota. So I think by building Line 3, you're actually being anti-business. I don't know. I just kind of like turning some of these arguments on their head because to me, Patrick, it goes back to this term called sea lioning. Have you heard of that before, sea lioning?
Funnily enough, I was just introduced to that term about two nights ago.
Yeah. So here's why I'm making these really kind of funny arguments that don't really make a lot of sense and aren't necessarily intellectually honest. It goes to this term sea lioning. This is something I also became familiar with over the past few days and weeks. So what sea lioning is when you have someone come in and just ask questions. So for instance, let's say you're saying, you know, I want to get vaccinated and you should get vaccinated too. Someone who's sea lioning will often come in and say, can you provide evidence that those mask mandates work? And you'll provide them their evidence, and then they'll go ask you another stupid question. And that process just continues and continues along. Essentially, what the goal of someone who is sea lioning is to just wear you down. So eventually, you who are trying to answer their questions will give up and say, go do your own research. And then the person asking the questions can turn around and say, well, you're being unreasonable. I just wanted to have a nice, reasonable conversation with you, and you got mad at me. Essentially, their goal is just to wear you down by continually asking you stupid questions. So I think this is a nice little counter. So if someone's asking you bad faith questions, especially about vaccinations and mask mandates, I don't know, just kind of turn things around on them and just give them a bunch of bull crap arguments, like about how vaccines are pro-business and pro-freedom and and they're for America, they're for red, white, and blue, and they're for apple pie and baseball or whatever else. That's what vaccines represent. Because if someone is going to ask you a question in bad faith, which is most often the case when someone asks you, well, can you provide evidence that vaccines work? They're going to ask you a stupid question, give them a stupid answer, and have some fun with it. I think you can do this with just about any issue where if someone's asking you a bad faith question, give them a kind of smart aleck answer saying that, no, I'm actually the person who's pro-business and pro-freedom and pro-liberty. So wanted to bring that up because I'm absolutely tired of that. I fortunately don't participate on this in social media because, well, mostly I'm not on social media much anymore. But I've had several friends who have gotten roped into these types of things where you have that one right winger that posts that comment saying, well, can you provide more evidence that vaccines work? And you, of course, get roped in and say, well, here is the evidence showing that vaccines work. Then they'll continually ask you questions until things ultimately break down. So if someone's asking you a bad faith question, give them a bad faith answer and have some fun with it. Kind of fun to do some reverse trolling. All right, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break and come on back and talk about redistricting. We have new census data around the country, and we'll talk about that. How that could impact Congress and our new districts here in Minnesota. So stick with us here on AM 950. So essentially what I was saying last segment, troll the trolls. If someone's trolling you with stupid questions, give them stupid answers and troll them back. I thought of another example of how you can troll someone back, and it has to do with critical race theory. Of course, that is the big new Republican issue of 2021. Here's how I think you can turn that issue around a little bit. Instead, when someone says, we need to ban critical race theory in schools, don't respond by explaining what critical race theory actually is and talking about how high schools don't actually teach critical race theory. I would instead respond by this. Say, by banning critical race theory, you are promoting school censorship. You are taking control away from teachers to make decisions and handing it over to bureaucrats at the state capitol and in Washington, D.C. Why should we be taking control away from our local teachers who live in our communities and who know our students? Why should we be interfering with how they teach? It is school censorship. By banning critical race theory, you are censoring teachers in the classroom, and no one likes censorship whatsoever. So, yeah, I'm no referring to critical race theory as that. I'm calling it school censorship. So when someone passes a bill that's banning critical race theory, I'm asking them, no, you're not in favor of banning critical race theory. You are in favor of school censorship. Well, those are two firebrand words right there, schools and censorship. So there's another way you can kind of turn a stupid argument on its head. All right. Also in the news today, we have new census data that was just released. And lo and behold, to no one's surprise, guess what? The United States as a whole is now more urban and more diverse. Also, what was significant from the latest census findings was that Native Americans, they had the biggest jump in population size as they now make up the largest size in modern history. So let me try that again. Native American population jumps to the largest size in modern history. That is also according to census data. Now, this data is important because this will determine how congressional and state legislative districts are going to be drawn in the next few months. Now, to rewind, these census and redistricting is done, of course, every 10 years. The last time we had new census data was back in 2010 and 2011. And it just so happens that 2010 was a very good election cycle for Republicans. And in many states, they were able to gerrymander states to make sure that they maintained control of their legislature and also their congressional districts. Now, in most states, in order to gerrymander and to draw your own districts to your partisan advantage, you need control of both chambers of the legislature, and in most cases, you also need control of the governor's office, although there are a few states where that is an exception, where only the legislature draws those maps. And that's significant because in 2010, Republicans were able to, for the most part, draw congressional districts whichever way they wanted. So they would mostly pack Democratic voters into one district and then put all their Republican voters in the other districts to give them an unfair advantage. Think about something like the state of Wisconsin, which for the most part is a 50-50 divide between Republicans and Democrats. But since in 2010 and 2011, Republicans controlled the legislature and the governor's mansion, they were able to draw their own legislative districts. So even though for the most part Wisconsin is a 50-50 split between Democrats and Republicans, their districts in the legislature were drawn in a way that Republicans actually end up with two-thirds of the districts. You can even go back and look at the 2018 election cycle where, as a whole, Democratic state legislative candidates received more votes combined than Republican legislative candidates. But despite that, Republicans still won 63 of their 99 districts, a little bit more than 60%. So that's how gerrymandering is done. So several states did have to redraw their maps during the 2010s decade, including North Carolina and Pennsylvania, because they were gerrymandered in such an extreme way that the court said, these are so extreme, you actually have to go and redraw your maps. And that made those states a little more nonpartisan. So the court stepped in during 2016, 17, and 18 and made states like North Carolina and Pennsylvania redraw their maps. And in fact, I would make an argument it's a big reason why the Dems were able to take the House majority in 2018. If we were using the original maps from 2011, I would still think Republicans would probably have a majority in the House of Representatives. Now, what's significant is that the Supreme Court ruled a few years ago that they can no longer ban partisan gerrymandering, at least when it comes to political party. Now, you can't gerrymander when it comes to race or ethnicity, but you still can gerrymander when it comes to political party. So that means even though North Carolina and Pennsylvania had their maps redrawn back in 2017 or 18, if they gerrymander again, courts aren't going to be able to step in and force them to redraw their maps. So the GOP could have a massive advantage when it comes to gerrymandering here during this cycle. Now, the good news is that Republicans control fewer chambers in 2021 than they did in 2011, but they still do have a hefty advantage, especially in states like Florida, Texas, and North Carolina, where they are gaining congressional seats. Republicans still maintain unified control in those states. So here's where the question lies for Democrats, where they control, have complete control of states. Should they gerrymander themselves? And unfortunately for the Dems, we've already largely gotten that answer, and it's a big fat no. Take a state like California, which of course is dominated by the Democratic Party. The Democrats, if they wanted, could gerrymander those districts to try to counter the Republican advantage that they're going to get in states like Florida, North Carolina, and Texas. But instead, what's happened in California is that they've decided to have their districts drawn by a nonpartisan commission, which I'll admit is good government and is the way we should have all of our districts drawn. But the question is, how do you make nonpartisan commissions a politically tenable goal when only one party wants them and only one party is incentivized to have these districts drawn in a nonpartisan way? I think the only way you do that is by gerrymandering yourself. So if I'm Democrats in states like California or New York, I think you might have to gerrymander yourself. It's obviously not good government, but I don't know how else you're going to get Republicans on board to get rid of gerrymandering. So that'll be something to watch over the next few months to see how states end up drawing their congressional and legislative districts. Because with that recent Supreme Court ruling, which essentially banned courts from forcing states to redraw maps that were gerrymandered in a partisan way, Texas, Florida, North Carolina, they're going to go to town and have some very likely extreme gerrymandered maps, which means even before the election is held in 2022, Republicans might already have a built-in advantage since the districts are going to be drawn in such a way that gives them an advantage. Now, one way we could get rid of this, of course, would be with national legislation and the For the People Act. That is the big H.R. 1 bill that Democrats have been touting in the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. Now, I was really happy about the For the People Act because it would force every state to draw their districts with a nonpartisan commission. But then you get the fine print that's in the bill. Guess what's in that For the People Act? Gerrymandering reform would not happen until after 2030. So while we're hearing several Dems talking about how it's so urgent that we get this For the People Act passed to get rid of gerrymandering and to protect voting rights, many of these provisions don't take effect until 2030. Can't make that up. That is very, very disappointing. All right, let's talk about what's happening at the state level with redistricting. Now, here in the state of Minnesota, we have a Democratic governor, a Democratic-controlled House, and a Republican-controlled Senate, which means we are probably not going to have gerrymandered districts since we have split control of our government. So very likely what will happen is that the courts will have to settle things and draw the maps, which has happened, I believe, every redistricting year since 1970 in Minnesota, since we have never had one party get unified control of government in a redistricting year. But there could still be some good news for the DFL. So a lot of districts, at least in the state legislature right now, that are in rural Republican areas, they don't have enough people to continue being a district. In other words, they have had so many people that have moved out of their districts over the past 10 years and into the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area that a lot of rural districts are going to have to be significantly redrawn. In fact, Democrats now control 18 of the seats that are classified as being too big versus only 13 for Republicans. So in essence, what that means when you have a seat that's too big, you have too many people in your district and you have to redraw the lines because I believe on average you're supposed to have something like, I think, 70 or 80,000 people in a Senate district. And what's happened, especially in the suburbs and in the city area, some of these districts now have upwards of over 100,000 people. So we have 18 districts which are too big for the Democrats, 13 for the Republicans. And of the seats that are too small right now, Republicans control 23, while the DFL controls only 12. And that's significant because, as Matt was talking about when we interviewed him during the 4 o'clock hour, that probably means we're going to have at least two or three more metro area House seats and maybe one or two more Senate seats. So that's what we're at least looking at here on the state level when it comes to redistricting with this new data that was released. Minnesota, of course, was able to keep one of their eighth congressional district because we beat New York by 80 people when it came to the census. And guess how we were able to keep that keep those eight congressional seats by having 80 more people than New York? Most of that growth that we had in Minnesota came in Hennepin, Dakota, Anoka, and Washington counties, again, the metro area. So it'll be interesting to see how these are going to be drawn in 2021 and 2022 here in our state. Like I said, it will very likely go to the courts ultimately, but we have so many seats that are way too big for Democrats and too many seats that are way too small for Republicans that it could significantly shift the balance of power here in Minnesota. I've always made the argument that we're closer to being a state like Colorado or Illinois than we are like Michigan or Illinois because the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area is growing a lot faster than rural Minnesota. And that's a similar trend that we're seeing in states like Illinois, where the Chicago metropolitan area dominates that state, and in Colorado, where the Denver metro area dominates that state. So I think we're much closer to being Colorado or Illinois than we are to being like a Wisconsin or Michigan when you look at their metro areas that are not growing at quite as high of a rate. So here's redistricting news for you. We'll come on back and take a break and talk about some more political news that's been coming across the wire. So stay with us here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson filling in here on a Friday afternoon. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, the final segment of the Friday the 13th edition of the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson filling in. Jack Rice will be hosting the show on Monday with a big name guest that you will not want to miss. I can't confirm the name of this guest quite yet, so we're still awaiting them, but it sounds like there's about a 95% chance that this person will be on Jack's show on Monday, and you do not want to miss it. It'll be a big exclusive here with Jack Rice, so tune in on Monday. And then, of course, on Tuesday, we will have the big Matt McNeil reinstatement party. And this will be a reinstatement that will occur, unlike the reinstatement of Donald Trump, which unfortunately did not happen today, which I feel bummed about. I specifically wanted to host this day because it was supposed to be maybe the biggest event in American history, and I could have put that on my resume, put that feather in the cap saying that I hosted a radio show on the most significant day in American political history, and it never happened.
That would have been owning the libs to the point they'd have to redefine owning the libs.
Oh, no kidding. Could you imagine, yeah, if that really happened, if he somehow was reinstated, if we have a, let me go back to my 7-step process of Donald Trump getting reinstated. Step one, fraud was proved. Step two, the Supreme Court rules out of thin air that the election was compromised. Step three, the Congressional Black Caucus switches to the Republican Party and elects Donald Trump as Speaker of the House. And keep in mind, these need to go in order, falls apart. Step four, Joe Biden resigns. Step five, Kamala Harris resigns. Steps, am I at six? I don't know. It's all a bunch of crap anyways. I don't care what number I'm on. And then the final step, Donald Trump returns with the line of succession. But what was important with this whole thing is that Trump would need to be made Speaker before Joe Biden and Kamala Harris resign. Otherwise, that would mean President Nancy Pelosi. My head is spinning trying to wrap my head around it, but that was supposed to be the process that was going to happen today, and it never did, and I'm very bummed about that. But as you were talking about, it would be the ultimate own if all seven of those steps did occur. What would we be doing on the air if that really did happen? I guess we'd have to be we'd have our tail tucked between our legs, and we'd be saying, Donald, you were right all along. We're sorry. What would you be doing if this really happened?
I think it'd be even more unbelievable than I wasn't here for the 1-6 stuff. That was the other.
Oh, it would blow 1-6. Yeah. I would argue it would blow 9/11 out of the water. If you were to have a president and a vice president resign, a new Speaker of the House elected, who would then ascend to the presidency all in one day, while the Supreme Court would make a random ruling out of thin air. That would be a significant day in American history. The only day that I could think would maybe be more significant would be the start of the Civil War. I mean, you could make the argument that Trump being reinstated would possibly be even bigger than Pearl Harbor Day. All right, maybe not Pearl Harbor Day, but it would probably be the biggest event, at least since then. But it never happened. Hey, taking a look at our comments feed, I know we have Tim is very disappointed. He says he's going to take a nap until Donald Trump is reinstated. So, Tim, you might be napping for a while. Also, I want to say hello to Curtis, Uncle Curtis of Native Roots Radio, who's been tuning in on the Facebook feed. And Deb Staley coming up with a good comment talking about a lot of right-wingers are believing that vaccinations are doctor-assisted suicide. My God. Really? And she also brought up that in some rural areas, ambulances are not even available. Yeah, imagine that. If you're having a heart attack or if you get in a car accident, you dial 911, you need an accident, you're in a life-threatening situation, and the 911 operator says, we don't have any ambulances available because people don't want to get vaccinated. Again, back to what I was saying earlier this hour, getting vaccinated is pro-freedom and pro-liberty and also pro-business. All right. Let's go to some other news of the day before we wrap things up for today. Afghanistan pullout proving treacherous for Biden. Washington Post reports Republicans are already pouncing as the country's collapse has accelerated in recent days. But the politics of Afghanistan and America's foreign engagements in general are not straightforward. Some centrist Democrats have joined hawkish Republicans in questioning the Afghan pullout. Will this ultimately hurt Joe Biden in the long term? I don't think so, because I think our attitudes about war have fortunately changed somewhat since 9/11 and the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. It's a very weird anti-war coalition that I think we have in our country right now, where there's, of course, a lot of people on the progressive side of the aisle who are against war, but there also are a lot of right-wingers and Trump supporters who don't like us being involved in foreign entanglements as well. So ultimately, even though it looks like the Taliban might retake Afghanistan, I don't think this will really hurt Biden in the long term.
Remember, this is just finishing what Trump started, because Trump started that drawdown.
That's a very good point, and no one's bringing that up, that the drawdown, as you said, was started by Donald Trump, not Joe Biden. A federal has left the new eviction moratorium in place, and thank God for that, because a lot of people are still very far behind on their rent, as are landlords who are probably far behind on their mortgage payments. Now, I'm not going to cry any tears for landlords out there, but the problem is not landlords versus tenants. It's really the banks that hold those mortgages. I don't like the idea of pitting landlords versus renters right here. Ultimately, someone needs to foot the bill for what's happening with people not being able to pay their mortgages or pay their rent. And that responsibility shouldn't fall to the renters or even the landlords. That's got to go to these banks that were, of course, obviously bailed out back in 2009 and 2010. Let's see, what else do we have? The crisis at the border is worsening. U.S. border agents, according to the Washington Post, stopped more than 188,000 immigrants trying to cross the southern U.S. border in June, marking a 21-year high in monthly boarding crossings. The administration considers lifting COVID-19 restrictions and allowing more immigrants to claim asylum in the U.S. Here's something I'll bring up about immigration. I talked about this a lot back when I hosted The Daily Show in 2000. The Daily, not the actual Daily Show, no, just our daily 4 o'clock program here on AM 950. I talked about a lot how when it comes to immigration, we're too often looking at the symptoms and not the causes. A lot of these immigrants are coming from Central American countries like Nicaragua and El Salvador, countries that have been destabilized politically thanks to the United States intervening and largely overthrowing democratically elected governments. I mean, imagine if you're sitting here, let's say, in the state of Minnesota, or even the country of the United States, and our country gets democratically overthrown. Well, I guess that almost happened on January 6th. Imagine the chaos that would ensue in our country if all of a sudden we have a foreign power come into the U.S. and say, your president is no longer president. It's going to be our guy instead. The country would be thrown into absolute chaos, and a lot of people would be trying to probably seek asylum in another nation. And that's exactly what's happened in South America. You can go back and look at history during the 20th century and see the number of times we've overthrown democratically elected governments in Central America. And look, lo and behold, when we destabilize those countries, crossover and people want to leave and seek asylum. So this is a problem of our own doing, of why we're having so many people seek asylum at the border. It's because we were overthrowing governments in Central America. That's what happens when we intervene in foreign affairs that really don't benefit us at all. Well, I guess they benefit corporations, but not us.
And to be fair, this is not just a United States-only problem. This has happened a lot in Europe as well.
Oh, for sure,
migrant crises.
Yeah, Europe definitely doesn't escape any blame either. But at least when it comes to immigration, like I said, too often we symptoms and not the cause. All right, stay tuned. We got Native Roots Radio coming up next. Mary Kadesh Boni going to be speaking with Robert, so stick with us.